Could we have a moment of silence for the AA who recovered for the past 70 years? Today we have three speakers. We have John K. from Pennsylvania, Jay N. from Texas, and Steve S. from New Zealand. Why don't you give them a little recognition? Oh, by the way, I'm Claire. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Heartland, Wisconsin. My AA group is the 615 St. Ansgar's meeting. My sobriety date is April 14th, 1974. I'm a little nervous. I had many thoughts on this today, on just the changes this program has made in my life. There have been so many of them, before the program, after the program, and still with the program. But it's I'm very tickled to be here. I'm very happy. And I have a whole lot of friends in this room, and a lot more than when I walked in, I hope. Our first speaker is John K. from Pennsylvania.
Hi, everyone. I'm John. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the Great Valley Group in Devon, Pennsylvania. One of the two finest groups in AA. The other one, obviously, is yours. In the beginning of the how it works in the big book, it goes over a number of ideas why many of us found a lot of difficulty getting here to sobriety. Some of us have rare emotional and mental disorders. Some of us are constitutionally capable of being honest. Some of us held on to our old ideas too long. And many of us, like me, didn't recognize how powerful and cunning alcoholism was. So today, I know that. I know how incredibly powerful it is. In retrospect, I can see how many times I was right at the turning point. And the big book tells us right after all of those warnings that we finally have to give up. We have to stand at a turning point and ask his protection and care a complete abandon. And then he gives us the steps we took. Little background. I started drinking when I was 17. I got married when I was 21. I was already a daily drinker and a heavy drinker when I had the money. I went to Korea for just enough time to learn how to say very sincere foxhole prayers. I came home, went to college on the GI Bill, got a degree into a career, which meant more money, more promotions, more travel, more drinking. And probably even I became a workaholic. I'm not sure of that, but I guess I probably did. So here I am now at, not now, but here I am there, fast forward to age 55, to age 55. I'm a corporate vice president in a very large $3 billion company, lots of travel, lots of entertainment, lots of drinking, and many severe blackouts I had. Sometimes I didn't remember where I'd been for the weekend. Many times I didn't know how I got where I was or why I got there. But I didn't recognize any of that as a turning point. I knew other people who were alcoholics, but I wasn't like them. I had all these things going for me. I had a pretty nice house. We had several cars in a nice neighborhood. Although I lived in a room separate from my wife in the house, and I had very little contact with my wife or with my four grown children. I was not a decent husband. I was not a decent father. They knew I was an alcoholic. But I certainly hadn't reached that turning point. I was still doing pretty well. However, the last 3 years of my drinking gave me many opportunities, several of them very special, to recognize that I was at a turning point, that I had to quit, admit defeat, and ask for help. And all three of these involved ambulance rides to an emergency room. Let me tell you how adroitly I handled those. The first happened at home. I got very sick, couldn't breathe very well, very nauseous, irregular heartbeat. My wife called an ambulance, and off they took me to ER. Between my wife and the hospital, they knew very well what the cause of the problem was. So they put me in detox and recommended that I go to a rehab. I, of course, said to myself, I just had the flu last winter, a very bad case of it. I'm probably weak from that. And that's what happened to me here. I didn't. All I've got to do is cut down on my drinking and be a little bit more careful. So I declined their gracious offer of a rehab. The next time, it was about 10 months later, and I was so sick this time that I went to my doctor's office, or I went to see the doctor. No, I didn't. Someone drove me. And on my way back to the room where he examined you, I collapsed and fell into a closet and knocked down 300 bottles of pills. And he knew what the problem was. He knew I was at a turning point, so he called an ambulance, had them put me on a stretcher and carry me out. He didn't even examine me. He knew what the problem was. He, of course, told me at the hospital that I had to go to a rehab. I had no choice. But I, of course, thought that, first of all, when I got out of there, in any event, I didn't feel I was at the turning point that I had to do what he told me. I figured I would just slow down a little bit more. And at the time, I had a friend who had an apartment not too far from where I lived. And I figured if I got in trouble again, now that work knew and the doctors knew and the family knew, I'll just go lay down there for a day or two and detox myself. And I won't have to get involved in any of this stuff. And I will cut back on my drinking. I won't get this bad again. So within a very short period of time, incidentally, that time I was out of work 30 days. I lost about 30 pounds. And so there was no doubt that they knew it worked, that I had some kind of problem. But I was going to be very careful. But it didn't take long, a month or two, and here I was over at the friend's apartment laying down, detoxing myself again. Freaking, I went one too many. I just lay here and detox myself, and I don't have to tell anybody that I got sick again. After a day or so of that, I wasn't any better. I was a lot worse off, and I honestly was afraid I was going to die. I was really sick. I thought I was losing my vision. But I had another clever, evasive idea to avoid that turning point. I called another local hospital and asked them if they would detox me anonymously, on my terms. I would come into them. I wasn't going to tell them my name or where I lived or who I worked for, but I would bring cash. All they had to do was tell me how much cash to bring, and I would bring the money, and they would detox me, and then I could be out, and I'd be okay again. And I didn't see anything wrong with that. They, however, I guess, felt that I had reached the turning point, and they weren't about to have it, so So I really was at wit's end then, and I thought, I guess I do have to give up. I called the company doctor, and he got me lined up for a rehab and a detox that night, offered to come get me and drive me, but I was at the friend's apartment still. But instead, I called a drinking buddy and asked him to come drive me. And so Tony took me home to get some clothes and tell the family where I was going. And while I was home, I got very sick again. The same problem. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't stop the hiccups. The irregular heartbeat was going. I was nauseous. I was passing out. You know, you can guess what my wife did. She called the ambulance again. But my good friend Tony, my drinking buddy, poured me a glass of VO to sip on while we waited for the ambulance to leave. So. And in fact, the ambulance driver took that glass out of my hand, and that was my last drink. Yeah. The ambulance driver took it. So back I go to the hospital, back to the ER, back to the detox. And this time I guess I didn't have much choice but to... I mean, the company knew, my family knew, company doctor, family doctor, everybody knew. So I said, well, I guess I'm going to have to admit I'm at a turning point. I have a problem here. So I agreed to a rehab. I was in a rehab for maybe about a week, and my wife came up and announced that she was divorcing me. I already had cirrhosis of the liver. I was taking a whole cup full of pills every day, and now she's divorcing me. And she asked me to find another place to live. Please don't come home when you get out of here. That didn't help my cause. Next, I called my secretary at work to see how things were going, and she told me that when I got back to work, I was going to lose my job. So I thought, now my problems are piling up. I looked around the rooms, and I thought, I have problems. You people don't have problems like this. I have a lot worse problems than you, and if you had my problems, guess what you'd do? What else could you do? I figured I'd leave there and have a few drinks on the way home and figure out what to do with my life. Actually, I had no place to go home to, so. I was getting out on a Monday. I didn't know anyone in AA or any AA meetings, and so the rehab gave me the name of a man who had been through that rehab and lived where my old house was. And he would help me get to meetings and get to know people in AA and help me really accept it. So he called me on Saturday night. I was getting out Monday. He called me Saturday night to let me know exactly where he lived and told me that he'd help me and he knew others who would help me. And, of course, I took the opportunity to dump my problems on him. About divorce, job, health, and that I don't really think this thing is going to work for me. So here comes another big turning point. He got permission from the rehab to come spend the day with me Sunday. So that's a miracle, a gift from God, and another little turning point. He spent all day Sunday with me at the rehab and listened to all my problems. I didn't like anything he said. In fact, I hated everything he said. But he kept getting back to, you're going to be all right. You just don't drink a day at a time. And so he asked me to give him 1 hour without a drink, leave the rehab and drive home without a drink. He said, that's only 1 hour. And then I'll meet you and we'll go to a meeting. So another miracle, I agreed to do it. So I didn't have to drink on the way home. We told my wife I'd be out of there in a few days. And he took me to a lunchtime meeting and then out to eat dinner or lunch, whatever we had, and then to a meeting in the evening. And we had another long talk, and he asked me, what about work? And I said, well, as sick as I've been, I'm entitled to stay out about 30, 40 days probably, and I'm only going to get fired when I go back, so I might as well stay out. And he said, no, if you sit here and think about it, you're going to drink about it. So the only thing to do is go in there and get it over with. I try to tell him, you don't understand, I'm going to get fired, and I don't have a job, and doing medical coverage. And another miracle, I listened to him, and I went to work. And sure enough, I got fired the first day I was there. it wasn't without a little humor, though. The president of the company asked me, what's the rate of getting sober for alcoholics the first time around? And I just heard this in a rehab, and I was proud to know it. And I said, 20 or 30%. And he said, well, I have to report you to the board and what's happened to you. And how shall I phrase it to him? There's a 20% chance you'll be all right or an 80% chance you're going to screw up again. I'd like your resignation, please. So he did give me a job in the corner, though, for a couple of years till I got my health back. And so they were really very good to me. But so the next night, then, this guy takes me to his home group, the Great Valley Group, where I met what I call my benevolent liars, because every one of them said, oh, you're going to be all right in this 30 days. We're just hanging there for another couple of days. We'll help you. And I kept thinking, what could you do to help me? I mean, I'm at the bottom now. I'm out of a job just about. I have no place to live. I was living in a hotel then. I found a motel to live in. And I couldn't believe that a mess like me, that any of you had any interest in that at all. But you kept telling me that, and I kept hating it. And then after 2 or 3 months, another newcomer came to the room, a man, started talking about his problems, including losing a family and the fact that he's going to have to go to prison. I mean, he had a long list of problems. And I was sitting there listening to him, and I didn't know what I was feeling or what was happening to me, but then I realized it was an incredible turning point. I was feeling his pain. I knew exactly how he felt. And then I could believe that you people knew how I felt. And I wanted to help him, and then I could believe that you wanted to help me. So that was a tremendous turning point for me, that I felt like I belonged and you people would help me. excuse me. My sponsor obviously then pushed me into the steps and told me I was going to have to learn something about spirituality and prayer, and that looked pretty difficult, although we did have a man in our home group whose favorite saying was, God is love, and love is the answer no matter what the question. He always said God works through people, and he talked me into going to a God as I understand him meeting on Sunday morning, and said God works through people. If you keep coming to this meeting, he'll work through these people, then you'll get spirituality. You'll understand faith, and you'll get this part of the program. I didn't see how that was going to happen, but I figured I'll try anyhow. And he explained to me page 53 in the big book, where it states that many of us have walked far over the bridge of reason and logic, but we just couldn't step onto the shore of faith. We had every reason to get there, but we just wouldn't step ashore. And Leonard said, well, you just keep coming out on that bridge and keep listening. And so I kept coming out on that bridge, and I kept listening, and lo and behold, another turning point. I couldn't get ashore, but you came out and got me and took me ashore. And you led me into the field where I could understand spirituality a little bit. You let me understand the word peace and the word serenity, and helped me find a new freedom. And then you taught me that the biggest turning point of all for any one of us is that we can do for somebody else exactly what people had done for us. And I should dedicate the rest of my life to trying to help somebody else get to their turning point. So I'm incredibly grateful to be sober and to be here with all of you at this 2005 convention. And thank you all for helping me through my turning points.
Sitting there listening to John, it sounded like my story a little bit. Those turning points, are kind of exciting when you look back at them. When you're going through them, they're not very pleasant. I wasn't aware of this, but 2 years before I came in this program, my wife went to her first Al-Anon meeting, and that was my first turning point, and I didn't even know it. Our next speaker is Gay N. from Texas. Let's give her a big hand.
Hi, my name's Gay Nimitz, and I'm an alcoholic. And like you said, I'm from San Antonio, and hope to see all of you at the 2010. But then that's a long way off, and we are supposed to stay in today, aren't we? I heard at a meeting somebody shared that alcoholism or AA was like an orgy. When you left, you felt better, but you didn't know who was responsible. And being at a convention like this, this huge, we really don't know who's responsible. To tell you a little bit about me, I am legally blind. My visual acuity is 20 over 200, which means if I stood 20 feet from an object, you stood 200 feet from an object, we'd see it about the same. I'm also very sensitive to lights, and I'm colored blind. And when I was lonely. I felt left out. I felt different from everybody from little on until the day I found alcohol. And I couldn't see any better, but I sure felt good. But as I continued to drink, I became more and more miserable. I became a daily drinker. I was a blackout drinker. And I was totally dying inside, and I was miserable. And I guess the first turning point that I had was one day when I got down on my knees and I said, God, either change me or let me die. I don't want to live this way anymore. And the next morning I got up and I called Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to a meeting and a guy gave me a ride home from that meeting. His name was Frank. And he said, honey, you need to learn how to swallow your pride instead of alcohol. And I didn't have a clue what that man was talking about. And at that first meeting I went to also, a girl stole the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and gave it to me. And I'm glad we still have thieves in Alcoholics Anonymous. I went home and I read that big book. And I opened up the refrigerator, and I got a beer, and I started drinking. And I read the big book, and I drank, and nothing got any better. So I thought probably what I had done wrong is that I didn't do one of those 12-step things. So I called AA for the second time, and I asked if they would send someone over to my house. And they did, and this was another turning point for me. Two ladies came over to my house. I took them to the bedroom because I didn't want my kids to know I was drinking. And they sat on my bed, and one of the ladies was absolutely so kind. They both were, but one of them I especially remembered. She picked up my hand, and she held it, and she patted it. And I started explaining to her all the reasons why I drank. And I told her I drank because I was legally blind, and she patted my hand and said, bullshit. Well, I went through all the other reasons why I drank, and her response was the same every time. Anyway, they invited me to my second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that was on October the 23rd, 1985, and I picked up my desired chip and haven't had a drink since. I I have had many wonderful experiences, you know, and many more turning points through the years of my sobriety. One of the most humbling things that I've experienced is that I have the honor of having my story in the fourth edition of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anytime anything good happens to me or you know, out of my reach happens to me, like the honor of sharing here today, I just know it had absolutely nothing to do with me, that I couldn't make this happen. And I've learned through working these steps that I have a relationship with God. I think the turning point happens for me every day that I am willing to work this program and go through these steps. Every time I'm willing to do a tenth step and change the way I think. I had a sponsor that used to tell me, Gay, there's another way of looking at this other than the way you're looking at it right now. Gay, there's another way of looking at this other than the way you're looking at it right now. And I hear this over and over. And, you know, the Big Book tells me, you know, I need to let go of my old ideals, and the result is nil until I let go absolutely. And as I do that tenth step, especially, you know, I do a tenth step like I do a fourth step, you know, with the columns. And when I get to that fourth column, when I'm willing to look at it from an entirely different angle, I stand at a turning point. I don't believe the 10th, 11th, and 12th step are just maintenance steps. For me, they're growth steps, and they keep me growing in this program. I believe that I, you know, only know a little of what this program has to offer, and I keep coming back, and I keep working these steps because I am just amazed at the changes that happen in me and in my life. One of the big turning points was when I got to step 3. And I got down on my knees with my sponsor, and I did that third step prayer with her. And when I finished it, she looked at me and she said, "Okay, Gay, your future's none of your business." And I needed to hear that, you know, because lots of things would happen, you know. It was after that point that I ended up in public housing for blind people, which was another turning point because I learned to accept my visual impairment. I also heard a story about the same time that I did the third step prayer that was real meaningful to me, so I share it every time I'm asked to speak. But there was these two guys standing by this corral, and the gate got open, and the horses in the corral ran away. And the young man looked at the old man and said, "This is a bad day." And the old man said, "We'll see." And a few days later, the horses came back, and they brought with them this beautiful stallion. And the young man said, "This is a good day." And the old man said, "We'll see." And the young man got on the horse and fell off and broke his leg. And he said, "This is a bad day." And the old man said, "We'll see." And a few days later, war broke out, but he couldn't go because his leg was broken. And he said, "This is a good day." And the old man said, "We'll see." And hearing that at the same time I did my third step prayer just made me stop judging my own life. And any time that I'm at a turning point in my life is where God shows up. Sometimes I'm standing at the turning point, but most of the time I'm kneeling at the turning point, because I'm at a spot where I'm willing to let God take me in a direction that I've never gone before. And, you know, what a place to go, you know, when you have that kind of guidance. I have a little card that I pulled out and read this morning to a friend. It said, "My child, are you willing to do anything I ask if I promise you that everything will be okay? If the answer is yes, then let go. Your friend God." Or something to that effect. But I love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have no clue how long I talked, but thank y'all very much for letting me share.
I guess they have bigger and better drunks in Texas than we knew of. Thank you very much, Gay, for sharing that with us. Uh, to listen to her and have all her, to get over all her hardships, to me is just remarkable, because I never had any of those problems. Just one. I drank a little bit. But to overcome that and to be the wonderful person she sounds like today is just absolutely fantastic. Our next speaker is Steve from New Zealand, and I think he's one of the guys that came the furthest to this meeting. Let's give him a hand.
Hi, I'm Steve. I'm an alcoholic. And my home group is the Redwood Group in Christchurch, New Zealand. Thanks. I drank alcohol because I loved it, and if it still worked, I'd still drink it. I've said that a lot, and people have said, perhaps you shouldn't say that in meetings, but it's true. It was the best thing that I discovered alcohol in my teens, and it took me places. I'd arrived, and I could relax, and I could do things. I could play pool. I could talk to women, and I couldn't fight any better, though. I was thinking before, there's a video my son's got, and it's called Lemony Snicket's, a series of unfortunate events. And that was my life. I've never seen the video, but my life was a series of unfortunate events. Never my fault. In the doctor's opinion in the big book, it talks about how our problems pile up in us and become astonishingly difficult to solve. And frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. I remembered it. I can't remember the exact wording, but it sort of says we're stuck there unless, again, we can experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks that we see others taking with impunity. And when my ass was on fire, and my partner at the time was at me, and I rolled the car, or whatever, I could stop for a little while, but I'd see others drinking, even my friends, and sooner or later I had to drink again. And I had no idea I was alcoholic. About 1985, I was involved in a car accident. It wasn't a car accident. My friend and I ran out of petrol, and we were drunk, and we walked off to get some petrol, and he got there before me. I kept falling over. He got the petrol, and he started my car, and I jumped out in front of him to say, "Oi, stop," and he ran me over. And then he shot round the corner and come back and said, "What happened here?" and denied doing it. But the upshot of that was, and I know I'm an alcoholic, and my primary thing is alcoholism, but I got hospitalised, and I started some things with drugs, which carried on for a few years. But what happened was I was 35 years old, and I'd worked it out pretty well. Once a month I would go to my doctor. I would get all the pills I needed. He would ask me about how my drinking was. I must have mentioned it once. I didn't remember it. But they say that the medical profession is incapable of helping the alcoholic because we're incapable of telling the truth. And that was me. He said, "Do you need some more antabuse?" And I said, "Yes." And I had a drawer full of them. But I need the other stuff. And that carried on. And that was once a month I'd done that. And then I used to take my daughter. She was about a four-year-old daughter, and I'd sit her on my knee to try and get more sympathy. And he said, "How you doing, Steve?" And I said, "I'm drunk and I need help." And it was 10 o'clock in the morning. I turned into a daily drinker. I had bottles of vodka hidden around the house. I would wake up, drink, go back, lie down, sleep, wake up, drink. And even my friends from the local hotels and bars had said to me, "You're a shocker, you know. You're a shocker. We don't know what to do." I didn't. And, you know, through things I'd do when I was drunk. I went away from there to a treatment centre. No, I didn't. I went to a detox, and that was my last drink the day. That was in when was that? In June 1994. But unfortunately, I haven't been sober since then. About 6 months later, I swallowed a handful of pills because I never wanted to drink again, but I always wanted to change the way I felt. Well, not always, but I wasn't comfortable with the way I felt. I knew I'd done my run with alcohol, and from that day, I've never had anything since. But I went into a detox, and I finished off a half a bottle of vodka and walked off to the detox with a bag in each hand and thought, I'm going to do it. And I guess my journey began there. I went through the detox. I was there for a couple of weeks, I think, and I went away to a treatment centre. And I don't remember much about that treatment centre, but I remember being told by, we're in Canada, I can mention, there was an American guy who ran this treatment centre, and I hated him. I don't know why, I just hated the guy. And he turned out to be a lovely man, I'll say that, in case I forget to say it later. But the two things he said to me were, go to AA and get a sponsor. And that's the only thing I remember from that treatment centre. They say we stood at the turning point, and I thought of something before, and it was something I shared a while ago, and probably one of the big turning points before I got sober was I was drinking in a bar in an army barracks with some friends, and my friend's wife, my mate's wife, I offended her in some way, and she picked me up and she threw me across the bar, and she said, "Get a life, you wanker." And the reason I went back to that was because I got up and I thought, she knows. She knows I haven't got a life. I knew I didn't have a life, but she knew. And the whole army barracks knew after that. And that was one of the things that got me going. It wasn't the car accidents, it wasn't the being arrested, it wasn't the being locked up. I wore them like a badge for a while, being locked up for the night. You'd get out, you'd go down and see your friends, and you'd feel quite, you know, I got locked up, I'm tough. But yeah, it certainly wasn't like that. The other turning point was when I went in and I got honest with my doctor. And like I said, I started coming to AA. The home group I've got today is still a home group of mine. I've got several other groups I attend. But there was a guy there that I watched, and he drove a nice car, and he had a nice wife, and he had some lovely children, and his sharing used to move me. And it took me, I think, about 3 months, and I asked that guy to be my sponsor in the car park one night, and he said, "Well, try it for 30 days, Steve." And that guy's still my sponsor today. I've grown a lot in Alcoholics Anonymous through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember saying that wanting to do a fourth step, and he said, "Well, we'll start at step one." And we did. I remember going to his house, like Claire was saying, and I got on my knees with a man in the house with the curtains open. and we said the third step prayer together. And I thought, well, that didn't take. And I got on my car and got lost going home, and I thought it was a waste of time. And I've got a friend who says, "How do you know when you're ready to do your fourth step in AA?" And his answer was, "When you've done your third step." So I started to do my fourth step. And I'd done one of those in treatment, but I don't remember it, and I'm sure, certainly I wasn't fully honest. But I'd done a fourth step with my sponsor. No, I didn't. That's a lie. I'd done a fourth step with his guidance, and it wasn't the way it's written in the big book, but he had a series of seven questions, and the second to last questions was, "What are your dreams, real or imagined, and how can AA help you achieve those?" And I rung him up and said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "What are your dreams, real or imagined?" And he repeated the question, and I had no idea that I wanted my partner at the time to be my wife, that I wanted children, that I had no idea what I wanted. And he says, "If you can have anything in the life, in the world that you want, Steve, what would it be?" And I said, "A Harley Davidson." because that's where my mind was at the time. I had no thought for anyone close to me, brothers, sisters. It's interesting what you see, Claire. My brother and my sister are both legally blind, and I used to envy them. That they had this thing that people, I thought they got sympathy and that from it. And they didn't. They certainly didn't. But I thought they had this thing that people recognised, and I had this, I was just going mad. But I done a fifth step with my sponsor, and we stopped. We'd done it in the car, and we were driving around, and we stopped on a bridge, and I thought he was kicking me out. But we just stopped, and we stood for a while, then we got back in the car, and he told me, on the way back to his house, he told me a few things that he'd done. And I realised I wasn't alone, and he reached across, and he said, "Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous." I got up this morning. Oh, the lady sitting over there is five today. Leanne. I have to say, before I forgot, I got up this morning and I'm in a beautiful place in the world. I've been travelling with a friend from Alcoholics Anonymous. We've been to Hong Kong, we've been to London, we've been through the States. We're going back there, I'm in Canada. And I got up this morning and I felt alone and I didn't want to come to this. I wanted to go and be alone and get sympathy or something. I don't know what I wanted. But you say yes to AA requests. And so that's why I'm here. And some actions of a friend changed that. I was sitting on the stoop, is it the steps of the building we're staying in, and a guy walked past with one of these on, and I reached out, shook his hand, and we spoke for a while, and that was the start of the turn. A friend gave up some time and went walking with me, and I didn't know what was wrong, but I do now. I'm an alcoholic. And I've heard it said that meetings can keep you sober, but the steps will change your life. And so I had to take an action. I know that. I had a great friend who's passed away now. Unfortunately, he took his own life in the fellowship. But he used to say to me, "I don't know if acceptance is the answer, Steve. I think action is." And rightly or wrongly, for me, action, I need to do something, preferably for someone else. Thanks to my mate, because I didn't do a thing for him this morning, but he done a lot for me. I had no idea why I was in that situation this morning, but I know I don't need to. I just need to do the right thing. And I'm here now, and the good part about being here is now is I don't have to be here later. And he does. this is totally overwhelming that I even left Christchurch. I bought a motorbike a couple of months ago too. And it's not a Harley Davidson, but it's pretty good. I was engaged for 18 years to the lady who had she'd decided, actually that was another turning point, and I didn't even know at the time, but she was about to leave me. And when I went into this treatment centre, and she certainly stuck by me. We got married 2 years ago. And my friend flew back from the US to my marriage. And he was my best man. I never would have drunk with him, because I never liked him. He wasn't cool. But it's hard to explain. No, why not? It's not. You're all alcoholics. It's easy to explain. The gratitude that's in my heart here, just standing here today, having flown around the world with the blessing of my wife. I've got a young son he was nine the other day. He's never seen me drink. I've got a daughter who saw me at my worst. I used to take her down to the local hotel or bar. I changed the nappies on the pool table. And one thing, I'll just mention it because it's something that's big in my memory. And I remember it well. I was at the hotel and I passed out several times, and my so-called friends told me to go home. I had my five-year-old daughter with me, or four-year-old, I think she was at the time, and I was falling in the gutter, and I had blood all over me, and I remember her taking her socks off and trying to wipe the blood off Daddy and trying to get me home. And it's important I remember that sort of thing. She's 17 now. She's a teenage girl. But she loves her daddy, and I love her. And I'll leave it there. Thank you.
It's nice to see that they have the same problems in New Zealand that we have here. We all have the same shocks in our lives. Certain things sneak up on us. I mentioned before my turning point was when my wife got to Al-Anon. Right after that, I had another turning point in my life where I rolled over a car, and that had a turning point into a treatment center. And like Steve, I was in the treatment center and I had a counselor I couldn't stand, and he's happened to sitting right over here, and he's a good friend of mine. My life has just been full of that since I've got on this program. My wife has been very instrumental in my guidance. I didn't really want to be there, but I thought, well, 30 days away from her would be better than anything else at the time, and that's what I took. And also, like Steve, I was taught to go to AA meetings. That's the only thing I got out of treatment, is go to AA meetings. And the first AA meeting I walked in and sat down to, and the gentleman sitting over there is the first one to talk to me. He's the first one to teach me how to golf, and I'll never forgive him for that, though. Today he's my sponsor. We've been together for quite a few years, and it's been wonderful times. Our family's grown up together. There's a whole group of people when I came into AA that were newly sober, and we're all still together today. There's about 10 or 12 families, and it's just one of the remarkable benefits that I find in this program. I've been very fortunate with my family. I have a son sitting here, and he's sober 23 years. I have another son home that's been sober for 17 years. And somewhere out here, I got four nieces. And between us, my family, and in all of us, there's 174 years of sobriety. And I never think much of it until I start talking about it, and then it kind of shakes me up. I'm very thankful to be here. Public speaking is not one of my favorite things. And I was very lonely and lost this morning, and I would have liked to met Steve. We could have had a lot to talk about. I want to thank you all for coming and listening to us. And should we close with the Lord's Prayer?
Can we come down there?